Bring Design Closer, the podcast focused on discussing design's role in tackling complex societal issues. Our goal is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organizations to become more human-centered in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. My name is Jerry Scullion, and I'm a service designer, and I'm the founder of This Is HCD and the CEO of thisisdoing.com, where we provide live online design and innovation classes, transformational design and innovation training for teams and organizations, for people within the design and change-making space. Now, today in the show, we have the wonderful Iria Lopez, a UK-based service designer. I recently stumbled upon Iria's work on LinkedIn, where she was running a workshop. But what struck me was the theme. It was designing for loneliness. We speak about the importance of gaining greater context of why people congregate and attend extracurricular events such as design meetups, and that is of human connection. The importance of being seen and being heard and just generally being part of something. We chat about what we can do as change makers to be more aware of this context and include it in our facilitation sessions that many of us do quite regularly, and that's just to make space for it. Iria was a wonderful guest. Let's just jump in. Iria, great to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm delighted. I'll talk a little bit more how we've connected. I saw a post of yours on LinkedIn, scrolling through, as I tend to do, like, you know, every day scrolling through. And I saw a post of yours around workshop facilitation and loneliness. And I was instantly sort of grabbed by this topic. I was like, and I drilled in and looked a little bit more about what you were doing. But we'll get to that in a minute. But before we do that, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from and what you do.
Sure. So, yeah, my name is Iria. I'm from Barcelona and I've been in the UK for 7 or 8 years. I'm losing count now. Initially, I was living in London. Now I moved to Brighton.
Okay.
I came to London to work for Design Council as a program manager. My background is in innovation and research. I was originally trained as a psychologist. So like 20 years ago, I'm talking about here. But so I started in research and design research, and then I started moving.
Nice.
15 years ago, I moved into innovation and service design. And initially, I was mostly working in commercial type of projects. And then I started moving more towards social impact projects. I also take corporation projects sometimes and private projects, but recently I'm mostly on social impact type of things. So I moved to London to work for the Design Council. And then after a year and a half, I decided that I wanted to freelance. And I've been freelancing ever since, like for the past 5 years. And I've been working mostly on government type of projects, like either as a service designer, as a researcher, for the Ministry of Justice, Department for Education, also for local councils. I have also done charity work. I collaborate very often with a collective called Common Collective, that is actually the collective that funds the charity that you saw the post about.
Oh yeah.
So Common Collective is a network of service designers and researchers, a majority kind of freelancing, and then
Yeah, okay. The
approach was, well, part of the funds that we charge for clients can go to fund this charity Talking Taboos, and we kind of also run Talking Taboos, so it's kind of way of, yeah, it's our funding strategy for the charity.
Well, that's super cool. I'll definitely throw a link to the Common Collective into the show notes for this episode. I think listeners would like to learn more about that. But I remember seeing this post. This post, as I said, I shared it with everyone in This Is Doing. I was like saying, look, this is a super cool thing. Like, it's something that I've often thought about, the impact, especially working online. And especially now that we're primarily doing only online workshops. And the impact that loneliness has on people's lives, and how we're probably at a point in civilization where we're not communicating as much, we're not talking as much. That's a theory. I'm not entirely sure if that's true. But I'd like to learn a little bit more around how this topic came about.
Yeah. Well, it came about because of a personal experience, I was living in London and I had just broken up with my partner, and I was deciding what's my next move. I need to get out of his house. Where do I move?
Yeah.
And I decided to move to Brighton, but I decided to move to Brighton without knowing anybody in Brighton. So it was, and also I freelance, which means that I didn't have working space where I could get to know people. And interestingly enough, the first project that I started having when I moved to Brighton was for Worthing Council on the topic of loneliness.
Okay.
And I just thought it was quite interesting because I was experiencing it myself. So it was kind of first project when I arrived to Brighton in the middle of this feeling of isolation that I was having is around loneliness. So I started learning about the topic through the council and then Talking Taboos, like the charity that I run the workshop with, they were exploring, you know, like which taboo topic, which stigma topic do we want to work on that we could dedicate efforts. And we were talking about different topics. It was kind of either menopause or like other mental health problems. And I was really passionate about the topic of loneliness because of the experience that I was having myself. And that's when we decided, let's invest in that topic and explore what can we do about it. That's how I ended up working on the topic. It was more kind of from a personal interest.
I mean, the topic of loneliness, I guess it's got a stigma attached to what might be perceived as just older people living alone in a house and stuff. But I know myself, and I guess this is me putting myself out there a little bit, I've been extremely lonely at times in my life where I've been surrounded by people at parties and stuff, and it can be extremely isolating. I know when I lived in Australia, it was times you just kind of yearned for your own people and your own friends and your old friends and stuff, and it can be quite tough. What kind of work have you had to do around the stigma that's attached to loneliness?
Yeah, I guess like in terms of this stigma, it's one of the things that is interesting is that, for instance, there is an initiative that is happening in Brighton and across and everywhere, and that it's called Men's Shed. And I read recently that the success of Men's Shed, which basically is about like a group of men that goes into a shed and they build things.
So I've seen this.
But I mean, it was initially designed for loneliness, for addressing loneliness. But it wasn't presented as this is for addressing loneliness. And I read recently that the success of this initiative had to do with the fact that men didn't have to admit that they were lonely. And I think that it's quite interesting, the fact that if you are joining something, you don't want to be perceived that you're joining whatever it is because you feel lonely and you want to meet friends, to make friends. It's kind of, you just want to go there because it feels uncomfortable. And I think that this stigma also has to do with how do we react to people when somebody admits that they feel lonely. If you have close friends, maybe that it's okay to say it to them. But I think that generally there is perception that, you know, like when somebody says, I'm feeling lonely and you don't know them that well, we kind of tend to react withdrawing because it's almost like, do I now have the responsibility of being your friend because you feel lonely? So we, you know, it's this sense of burden. And I think that's part of the angle that we took in charity to explore was how do we react to the lonely? But no, I mean, like we also explore what does it mean to feel lonely and what it is loneliness. But we couldn't find anyone that was looking at the other side of the coin. It's kind of the community angle. I mean, we react in that way to people who present themselves as lonely because we are an individualistic society and we think that we individually need to fix someone's problem. We don't have kind of that community, like that sense of, well, if this person feels lonely, we can, you know, all the community can do something about it. It's kind of that one-to-one situation where suddenly you're, oh my God, and now I need to take this person out.
What do you have to do? It's unusual because I hadn't really perceived, at the moment, I'm feeling a sense of kind of vulnerability from just talking about saying that I feel lonely at times as well, right? What's causing that sense of unease about me sharing that for a start? What's your thoughts on that? But also, am I alone? Am I the only person who feels this sense of vulnerability to say, hey, folks, even though I have friends, okay, it's not like I'm sitting in a house on my own. I've got a family and stuff, but yet I still feel lonely. Like, I want to talk more around, is that something that's a common thing?
Yeah, absolutely. There are speak of the vulnerability Woo-hoo! And the shame of like admitting that how you're feeling, it has to do with social norms and with cultural norms and expectations and what is the persona that, I mean, we all want to be perceived as successful, yeah?
Yeah.
Is someone successful, someone who feels lonely?
Now they say it's lonely at the top, isn't it? It's one of the statements they say about fame, it's lonely at the top.
Yeah, it has to do with what is the image that we want to project and how much room for being human we have in society. In the professional world, we move a lot in the LinkedIn world, yeah? Mm. And the LinkedIn world is everybody's busy, everyone is doing something. And kind of one of the things that happens in the professional world is also that a lot of the interactions are based or driven by efficiency. And there is kind of that thing about you are interacting a lot all the time with people, but there aren't that, like, for connecting with somebody, you need to drop agenda. You kind of need to relax, to be spontaneous and to allow to be seen and to connect. Mm. And in the professional world, that is so difficult. Yeah, because of agendas, but also because of a sense of productivity and busyness and
Mm. Is it a gender thing, though? Is it? Because I've just finished watching a fantastic TV show called Catastrophe, which I had never seen before because we lived in Australia and it kind of missed us, it passed us by. But Sharon Horgan, fellow Drogheden from where I'm, there was a great scene in it where she's had her second or third child, or second child, I think it was. And she sees somebody in the mother's group that she really likes and wants to be friends with. She's obviously feeling really lonely and she comes on too strong. She comes on and she's like, you know, talking about like, we should catch up, we should go away for a weekend. And the other person pulls back and straight away they're like, listen, look, you know, I'm busy that weekend. And they're like, well, which weekend? Because I didn't say the date. And they were like, you know, listen, I'm going to be busy for quite a while. And, you know, it creates this whole kind of sense of comedy around that unease. Is it a gender thing in terms of like men not wanting to be vulnerable? Or is this sort of like it doesn't discriminate against the genders or the sexes?
It doesn't, I think that it doesn't discriminate, but at the same time, I think that the fact that socially it's almost more accepted that women can express feelings more than men means that men bottom up more. And in that sense, maybe the starting point, the feeling is the same, but one is more expressed than the other. I think that I would say that loneliness in men probably is stronger. I mean, like the suicide rate stronger in the case of men. So it has to do with asking for help and how comfortable a man is asking for help. Yeah.
So like I know at life stages, there's certain points where connections with people who are going through the same experiences can be quite helpful. I know when we had our second child, or our first child in Australia, actually, it's a really interesting comparison between the two worlds. In Australia, in the hospital, they connect you with other mothers who've just delivered babies in the hospital as well. And they form a mother's group out of that. So it's much earlier in the process. It's fantastic. My wife Vicky's connected with some people and they're lifelong friends. Like we still message them all the time back in Australia. Over here, not so much. It was very much like, you know, you're out on your own. You have to go and try and find mother's groups to join and so forth. And it was really powerful. It was a powerful thing to help combat lots of different uncertainties about it to be a parent and stuff. Is that a common approach, like by looking for life stages that are kind of there, like say retirement is a big one. Like whenever people retire, you join the golf club, you join the tennis club, or you join a charity, whatever it is. And there's other people who are going through the same life stages as you. And is that the right approach to take? Or is this something that we need to think more holistically about, that loneliness is now with us? It's a perpetual thing. You can be lonely from a very young age and it can carry through to old age.
Yeah, I mean, it can happen at any stage. In fact, like the numbers of loneliness are the times that are higher at the minute are in younger people, which is quite surprising, but it's kind of almost the same or more than with older generations, which is kind of the typical idea that we have in mind. And it's kind of, I mean, loneliness, there are different types of loneliness. If you read any book around it, they differentiate between chronic loneliness and temporary loneliness.
Yeah.
And we have been talking about some between thriving and temporary loneliness, which is kind of the functional. Yeah. And so temporary is when a life stage change, something that happens to you.
Yeah.
It's kind of all in a sudden, you have a child and all in a sudden your world is that, and eventually you start feeling lonely because you are just focused on that, or you have gone through a breakup, or you move into a new city, or you suddenly become unemployed, or all of those situations are triggers. And doesn't mind what state you are in life, they are just triggers. And chronic is more like you have been through a state of loneliness for a very long time. And we are talking here about years. And in that situation, what happens to people who are in chronic loneliness is that they start becoming a bit more negative, because it's kind of, they are alert about any social, they perceive things as a threat as well. They enter into a circle of being suspicious of others at the same time that needing the connection. Whereas when you're in a temporary loneliness stage, you still have all your social skills perfectly fine. I mean, like, it's more like, and to be honest, it's kind of, it's a spectrum. We are always in a spectrum of now we are thriving, now I'm temporary loneliness, now I'm functional, now I'm, you know. And I think that what is in society is not realizing potentially about this is the fact that the importance of having many types of relationships, like people when they married and have kids, sometimes they become very insulated in their world. And then what happens is that you start losing the weak connections with your friends or with other people. And that is where, you know, the tree becomes less strong, because you have... you need a variety of relationships. Not all the relationships are going to be intimate and super close to you. There are different types, and, you know, the richness in the variety. The same way that in our stomach, the richness is in multiple types of bacteria, the richness for a healthy life from a social perspective is having kind of the variety.
No, it's beautiful. I'm trying to think, is there a connection there? And is that a fair assumption to make that the deprivation of human face-to-face connection drives loneliness? Or is it a case that you can be surrounded by people and still be lonely?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that the best definitions that I've seen about loneliness is defined as you don't feel lonely when you are seen by the other. So the person sees everything about you and you feel accepted. So it's kind of, you show who you are, and still, you're still loved with all your mistakes, your errors, your everything that is not potentially right. And obviously, that sense of the lonely in the crowd means that you are surrounded by people, but actually either you're not allowing them to completely see you, or you are trying to show, but they don't understand you, or you don't feel accepted. So doesn't mind how many quantity of people that you interact with, it has to do with how much do they really know you, and how much do you feel accepted by them.
So it's the ability to break through that veil and having the confidence to reveal your true self, which completely makes sense now when you say that to me. So I want to talk a little bit more around the workshop space, because, like, walk me through what that workshop achieved and how did you go about doing it? Tell us.
Yeah, so I mean, like, one of the things that we were discussing in the charity was kind of, okay, we need to identify a context that we are going to work on. It's kind of loneliness at work, loneliness in friendship and relationships, loneliness in the neighborhood. We needed to pick a, you know, like a context to design for, and we decided to pick up neighborhoods. We realized that sometimes people, when they feel lonely, they, what they try to do is to join things. And that can be you joining pottery class, you go, I don't know, like swimming club, illustration, yoga, whatever, you know, like people try to join things. And what we realize is that those events, unless they are designed by an organization that is oriented towards community engagement, if it's a regular event organizer, they are just there for delivering the activity. They are not aware that sometimes people are, illustration or pottery is an excuse. They are there to meet people. And I think that event organizers are not aware of it. And the spaces are, you know, like, it's, you arrive, you might have a bit of a chit-chat with somebody if there or not, and then you do the thing, and then you finish the thing, and you go back home. And maybe, and you potentially will keep seeing those people, but always in the activity setting. You don't, I mean, it's not that you hang out with them or anything.
Absolutely. I'm laughing here, not because of the topic. I'm reflecting on a time that I joined Toastmasters. And I joined Toastmasters to get better at public speaking. I had an objective. I was going there. And there was one or two elderly gentlemen who were obviously there to connect with network. And they kept on asking me out for coffee. And now I feel awful. I'm laughing because they're like, hey, we should catch up on the weekend. I'm like, no, you're all right. I said, I'm just here to do my public speaking. But I realize now, it's funny, like, I realized they probably just wanted to go out and do some stuff. But I was, you know, I was a busy man. I was doing stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
It's really important to call this stuff out because we're doing stuff on This Is HCD. We're doing stuff on This Is Doing. We're doing events. We're doing communities and conferences and stuff. A huge part of that is going to be wanting to network and wanting to chat.
Yeah.
How can facilitators enable more of this? What advice would you give to people?
Basically, what happened in the workshop was that we started the workshop with a storyboard, imagining somebody. We had the persona like John, and John has just gone through a breakup and he wants to join an illustration class. And he arrives there and he sits down waiting for the teacher. And there is, on his left side, there's a couple of people that they are talking among themselves. And then on the other side, there's somebody who is by themselves. And he starts chatting, but the other person feels uncomfortable because feels that they are talking too much and start kind of withdrawing a bit. And the class happens and they go back home and they feel more lonely than when they went to the class, yeah? So, I mean, like the discussion that we had was kind of the journey of before you go to the class, during the class, and after the class.
Yeah.
And before you go to whatever event, a lot of the people who really feel lonely, sometimes they, even though they have signed up, sometimes they don't show because they, the unknown, there's no a familiar face that I'm going to see there and kind of how uncomfortable that is. The first question we were exploring is what can we do about it? And then when they people arrive, what can we do to create a sense of connection before the activity starts? And that can be just simply to say, 10 minutes, we're going to have a cup of tea and we have a chit chat, and making it explicit in the event, but the description saying we are going to have 15 minutes at the very beginning so that we start creating a sense of community. So putting intention into it is important, and saying this is kind of a community friendly event. It's not just about the activity. And so that people, if you're busy, you can just go directly into the activity and skip the 15 minutes. But if you're there also for meeting people and for having a sense of connection, you can go there those 15 minutes having kind of that moment. Yeah. That's an example. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great because with the Doing Design Conference or the Doing Design Festival, as we call it, the first one of the big things that was called out was like, hey, you had a nice balance of networking, as we called it, like smaller groups for chat around specific topics. And we did more of it for the second one. And we could see a split. And now, as we're talking, it makes more sense, okay? Because some people were like, there was too many breakouts. And then other people were like, it was just the right amount. They wanted that. And it was like what you've just said. They wanted to go to these things to connect with other people. And it's so important because I remember I went to the SDN conference in Toronto. I don't know what year we're in at the moment. Whenever the last one was, that was in person. And after the third day, I was like, oh man, I have spent the entire time in the concourse just chatting, just talking, like, you know. And that's what conferences are for me, meeting like-minded people. I go to the talks when I can, but most of the time it's really there to connect with people and have conversations. And we need to enable that, whether it be in a conference or class, whatever it is, it's super important. Can I ask you a little bit more around advice around the technical aspects? You know, I know within This Is Doing, we encourage people to leave their cameras on and leave their mics on and create more of a sense of connection and richness in conversation. Have you found that people are lonely? Is there a connection between turning the camera off or turning the camera on? Or, well, what advice would you give?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that obviously with the camera thing, I mean, like when we talked about the events, like the other day, we didn't specify whether it was online or we assumed that it would be more face-to-face. But I can talk about my own experience about, I have been in situations in projects where in the entire 3 months of the project, part of the team, I never saw their faces because they were all the time with the camera off. And I think that it's kind of doing work through radio almost, just the voice. I feel that it's a mix. You need to have the permission of turning the camera off sometimes if you're in an intense project of 3 months, because it's so intense to be looking at your face the entire day. So I think there needs to be kind of that permission of taking the camera off sometimes. Well, I think that what's important is that it's more difficult to build trust just through online, just through camera, because we trust people based on the intuition of how the person is moving, how, like, we need so many elements to build intuitively, to build our sense of trust. And you need more time than in face-to-face to build that trust. So I think that in any project or in anything, that is takes longer. So I would say if we are doing a project, like the very beginning, always with camera, and then afterwards, maybe it's kind of can be on and off. But yeah, definitely, I think that the camera is important. And also kind of whomever is facilitating whatever workshop or session, or I think that we have a tendency to imitate or to mimic the energy of the person that is facilitating or running the event. So if the person goes into a mode of efficiency, like, okay, right, let's go for it. You know, like, this is the agenda, 5 minutes. That's the energy that you're going to create in the group. This is all about efficiency. This is about getting things done, which is, I mean, there's room for that sometimes, but obviously, if we want to build that connection and that addressing loneliness in our workshops and in our sessions, I think having that moment of, okay, the moderator, kind of the workshop facilitator, before they start, if they breathe, if they get calm, if they ask everyone when we start, can we just take 1 minute to pause? I've done workshops where the person would say, let's close our eyes and just breathe for a moment and be present before. And I know that this sounds very hippie-like, but it really helps to just bring your own self to that situation and really now be present instead of interacting while you have the mobile phone on, you know, like, because the distraction also affects the ability to connect.
Yeah, there's like you're holding these events through a computer, which houses the majority of the notifications that you're going to receive, your email, your social networks, everything is in there. So you're fighting against all of that. So it's something to be aware of. In terms of calling this out in the intent of the workshop, so say you're doing a workshop, for argument's sake, about design research or service design or whatever it is, how do you go about, or do you go about, should I say, calling out the fact of loneliness? Or is it just in how it's designed, setting up those spaces to become more vulnerable?
Yeah, I mean, what we have been doing at the minute has been to, aside from doing the starting to the events organizers workshops, what I started doing in Brighton is to organize something that we called Connect Through Cooking. So I have been practicing this in that setting more than in the service design setting, even though it's totally applicable as well. But I have been putting it in that context because I felt that I had more space for experimentation, and we use that kind of as a living lab, if you want. And in that context, what we have been doing is at the very beginning to have some quick fire questions, like to get to know each other. And it can be, are you more tea or coffee? If your house would be on fire, what would be the three things that you would take with you? You know, like, I mean, vulnerability is something that people allow themselves to reveal as they build trust. You can't just like start a workshop where nobody knows each other and tell me your deepest, you know, your darkest secret. Yeah. It wouldn't work. So it's something that you need to build little by little. And
absolutely,
at the very beginning, it's a simple thing, like, are you more tea or coffee type of person? You wouldn't imagine how much somebody can reveal about themselves just with that simple question, because they start talking about their coffee routine, then I can't sleep if I drink coffee. And so you explain a bit of a story about yourself. And I think that the storytelling helps.
Absolutely. It was really interesting because Christoph Zern, who's a good friend of the podcast, we've had him on there talking about music thinking. And Christoph uses a technique in his workshop facilitation of what kind of music do you like? Okay, right. And give an example of a song. And I was like, oh, well, that's kind of cool. Like, you could pick something out random, like a Def Leppard song or a Kylie Minogue song, whatever you want. And I was like, what are you doing with that? And he was like, well, it's interesting, he says, because if it's a really kind of high energy kind of drum and bass, whatever it is, kind of sound, you know that person is kind of interested in kind of rhythmic kind of approaches to things. And if it's a really short song, like a 2 minute kind of pop song, they know they want the information really succinctly and they want that in a specific way. He's able to drill into the details a little bit more as opposed to thinking of it as a superficial piece of evidence that people are willing to give. I thought that was remarkable. I was like, that's a really nice way of approaching things that can reflect and help work towards building that trust that we're talking about here. Iria, like, you know, we're coming towards the end of the episode, right? If people want to reach out to you, how do they go about doing that? What's the best way for you to start a conversation with people?
LinkedIn, yeah.
LinkedIn, yeah. How we connected, how we connected. LinkedIn.
Yeah. I mean, like,
yeah, comes up to LinkedIn.
Because I don't have a webpage, or this is the only thing that I've ever done closer to something similar to to talking about myself.
Nah, well, I tell you what, you're a fantastic guest, and I know our listeners will find this topic really, really interesting. So I want to thank you for giving me the time and giving me your energy and sort of talking about this stuff. Some of it can be quite difficult to talk about. It requires some of us to be vulnerable. So I'll put a link to your LinkedIn in the show notes for people to reach out and talk about things. And I'll also put a link to the Common Collective and, you know, keep up the great work. This is fantastic stuff.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
So there you have it. That's all for this episode of Bringing Design Closer. If you like this episode, feel free to visit thisishcd.com, where you can access our back catalogue of over 100 episodes, with episodes related to service design, product management, design research, and much, much more. Now, if you're interested in design and innovation training, feel free to check out our business, thisisdoing.com, where you can join online classrooms and learn from the world's best design and innovation leaders. Join the This Is HCD newsletter, where you'll receive updates from the network. And also, if you're interested, apply to join the Slack community on thisishcd.com. Stay safe, and until next time, take care.